Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney.
We're the Happy Hipsters.
And this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it.
Welcome back. We are talking about the... I keep wanting to say the Prince of Azkaban. You threw me off yesterday. Shalom was like, what movie are we doing this week again? And he's like, the Prince of Azkaban. I'm like, the Half-Blood Prince. But the Prince of Azkaban sounds like some good fan fiction, maybe?
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's like, you know? Sounds like a cool, it's got a cool vibe. I'm going to sell it.
Okay, you sell it. So, again, we're talking about the Half-Blood Prince this week. Mm-hmm. But before we dive into the book at all, we just want to remind you, we are collecting money for charity. Guys, that end date's coming up really fast. It is almost April already. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to hit $250. We haven't even hit the 25% mark yet. So if you are able to do that, it would be wonderful. We are collecting money for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. We do have health concerns with this pandemic around the world right now.
Yeah.
And we understand that money is tight for people. But again, these are the children who would be at risk, who would need the care because they are already compromised with their, you know, immunosuppressants and things like that for them to get to get better. So if you are able to donate money, anything helps. It goes towards the Children's Fund, which allows the doctors to be able to allocate money quickly to those most in need.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal for us. It's something that, like, we really care about, so... Thank you for considering. Yeah, so if you want to give, just click the link in bio at...
@_happy_hipsters.
Yay!
On Instagram.
Yay! I always feel like saying yay after you do that. Awesome. So let us do the character catch-up.
Voldemort and his followers are at large. They're wreaking havoc from disappearances of muggles and wizards alike to the destruction of a bridge. Meanwhile, Harry's rumored to be the chosen one. This has made him very popular as well as very hated. Harry spends the year learning all about Voldemort's past and is tasked with collecting a particular memory of Tom Riddle at Hogwarts. Harry gets a little distracted from his mission by his feelings for Ginny and his paranoia surrounding his suspicion of Draco Malfoy being a Death Eater. With some extra luck, Harry obtains the memory in question, which proves Dumbledore's theory that Voldemort has created multiple Horcruxes. Dumbledore takes Harry on a hunt for the Horcrux. This adventure ends in tragedy when they return to Hogwarts to find Death Eaters have entered the castle and Snape murders Dumbledore. To add an extra stab of pain, the Horcrux they found was a fake. R.A.B. has gotten there first.
R.A.B.
Who is he?
The mystery.
I have to say, I actually had a friend who predicted that R.A.B. was Regulus Black.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really impressed. They were like... They're like, it has to be Regulus Black. They're the only person that makes sense. Mm. And I was like, I was super excited when like that was actually true.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Right?
That's pretty impressive. If you've never read the books, read the next few books, it's one last book.
One last book.
The movies, books, whatever. But that's impressive.
Yeah. I was impressed.
That's awesome.
So, it is time to put this movie through the RATS rating and testing system. Mm-hmm. So, this movie can get up to 5 points. The categories are scripting and storyline, acting, cinematography, essence of the book, and the X Factor. They can get up to 5 stars, and we are going to rate it now. So, Shalom, what would you give it for scripting?
Well, for scripting, I decided to give it half a star.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there's so many gaps in it. Like, it doesn't feel right. You know what I mean? Like, it feels weird. It feels very pop. you know, like almost like they made it like this pop movie, mm-hmm. you know, like in the love triangles. I mean, it's cool. It's in the movie. It's in the book.
Yeah.
The way J.K. Rowling executes, you know, even the romance side of the book, like there's so much more depth and thought, and it really blends into the rest of the story.
Yeah. Wow.
I feel like in this movie, it was very much like this romance kind of like,
yeah.
you know, novel type of vibe. Very like I'm watching a teenage flick, you know.
Well, I mean, it is for teenagers.
I mean, it's for teenagers, but the way she wrote it, like J.K. Rowling's style is not a teenagery, you know, like mm-hmm. it's very mature, you know, like it's something that there's a depth to it. I feel like they removed that, but not just for the, like, I'm not judging this but as an adaptation yet, but like mm-hmm. I'm kind of like looking at it as just as it is. I'm like, yeah. okay, this feels like just a teenage flick, really. Yeah. And yes, there are other factors that are in there, but I feel like they spent so much time on that aspect, and I didn't really like that.
Mm-hmm. I also gave it half a star because, again, this kind of goes back to like how I felt about the Goblet of Fire. Mm-hmm. Like it just kind of jumps. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we come in, we're jumping from thing to thing to thing. And it's like, if you didn't have the book as your background, I think you would be very confused. Mm. There's also just, like, leaps in logic. Like, Harry can now do nonverbal spells. Like, we never talk about that. Harry, like, is also supposed to learn how to disapparate. Like, we never talk about that. Like, there's a lot of things like that where I feel like if you don't have the book knowledge, this doesn't really make that much sense. And I do think that they try to kind of make up for their lack of talking about Voldemort's life with, like, Harry can now hear Horcruxes. Mm. But I think that kind of takes away from, like, knowing your enemy. I think that kind of takes away from that. So I do feel, I don't know, I felt like scripting-wise, if you didn't have the books, it wouldn't make sense. And then some things feel forced. Like, I feel like Ginny feels very forced into this because they haven't naturally built her up in the previous movie. So because they haven't previously built her up, she feels very forced in this script.
It's like, where did this come from?
Yeah, you feel very blindsided by it. So I do, there's some things that I really love about this script, and there's some things that I don't love so much. But at the end of the day, I gave it half a star.
Yeah.
So what do you think about acting?
At one, I mean, I gave acting, it full. Like, let's just give it one for all the movies. because the acting is phenomenal. The actors are incredible. The you know, I do think that Ginny was underused as an actor. I think, like, there are certain aspects. When you read the books, you see, like, the character is more, like, rough and so forth.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll leave, like, that's more adaptation. But because I have read, like, the books, I know that it was a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, Ginny could have actually done more. You can see her rough side when she, like, yells everyone else down at the Quidditch tryouts. And so, like, it's one of those ways, like, she's very capable of bringing out a very, like, more, you know, more Fred and George kind of vibe. She has that vibe with her. And so, like, but they didn't really take advantage of her abilities there. Mm-hmm. But still, with what they had, with the script they had, even though we gave it a half, the actors did a brilliant job.
All of the actors did a good job. Mm. I have to say, Jim Broadbent as Horace Slughorn, he looks nothing like how I imagined Slughorn would look. Like, absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah.
But he freaking rocked that role. He rocked it. He did such a good job. I love that, like, we kind of get this, like, this good-hearted, but, like, also, like, a little bit smarmy. Like, he's, like, Slughorn's a very interesting character where, like, he's very, I would say he's ambitious, but doesn't like the limelight. That's what I would say. Like, he likes being connected to powerful people, but not necessarily there. So, and I think they brought that out a lot.
He likes the benefits. He likes the benefits.
There's
this benefit of, like, knowing famous people. You know, because he's a teacher, you know? He's a teacher, so he's like,
he knows them.
Yeah, he's like, okay, let me position myself so that I get, like, perks. I can go to get the best seats at Quidditch matches. I mean, you know, like, he's got that sort of, like, where he's like, he wants to live the good life. I think that's his vibe. It's like, that's why he does teas. He wants to have a good time. And, yeah. So he's that kind of personality. I think I would have fun with Slug.
You would have fun with Slug.
I'm like, oh my God, he's the best guy. I don't know if I'd be invited, though, but I would have fun.
Don't know if we'd be part of the Slug Club, but and I also think that I feel like they really let Rupert Grint like really spread his wings here in this movie. He's very funny. He's very funny.
Yeah.
I feel like he kind of had been very like angry in a lot of the previous ones. So it's like, I don't know. Ron's not my favorite character already, but I felt like this time, like, he really got to spread his wings a little bit, be goofy. I love the love potion scene. Love that.
Yeah.
These girls are going to kill me.
This girl's going to kill me.
That's great. Just overall, I thought acting, one star.
Really good, yes.
What about cinematography?
Cinematography, I loved it. I loved it. I feel like they finally got a hang of some of the CGI stuff, or rather the, I don't know if it's still CGI, but like the green screen or whatever. With Ron, like where Ron is, like Keeper and the tryouts. Like, it looks cool. Like it looks kind of real. You know what I mean? It looks legit. And so that there's a massive improvement there.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, they really pushed it with this movie. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So you gave it a full star. I gave it a full star as well. I felt like color palette wise, totally fit the vibe. Loved it. We had that nice balance between like J.K. Rowling's very, she's silly. Like, she's got like this silly tone about things. Yeah. But it also, this is a very serious movie at the same point, like at the same time. So we've also got that going on. Music was great. I thought there was a lot of really beautiful things. The way that they dressed.
The funeral scene when Slughorn is giving the speech and the music background. It's kind of like, it's almost like Amazing Grace, kind of like, you know, the music they play, that music they play, like, when you're watching, like, old Western movies, and they play, like...
Yeah, they were, like...
it was so cool. Like, I was like, wow, that's, like, a nice musical change to what they normally do, and it really fit. It was really good.
King of the Arachnids.
Aragog.
Love it. Love that scene. Yeah, the Liquid Luck scene is probably one of my favorite scenes of all time, just because I feel like they really, really got that vibe. Like, I feel like they got that vibe of J.K. Rowling. I love the way that they changed the tone of it so that you could really feel like, oh, Harry's lucky right now. Like, he's actually lucky.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Overall, the set dressings I thought were beautiful. I loved, loved, loved Fred and George's shop. Like, that really pulled together, like, how imaginative they are and how successful they are, how bright it was. Like, that was just gorgeous. I loved so much about that. Yeah, so I gave it a full star. So what about Essence, Shalom? What would you give this?
I'd like to give it a quarter star, but I won't. That's too hard. That's too hard.
Wow, that's rude.
It's half a star. Half a star. Like, they completely poofed this one. Like, there's certain things that I'm like, totally unnecessary. Fire, the burning of the Weasley's house, totally unnecessary. Right.
Some people argue that's for pacing.
Yeah, but it didn't work. Like, there are so many complaints on that.
Yeah,
but
everyone hates that.
But the issue that I have with this is, like, there are other things that they could have done, you know, to fill in those gaps. Because I feel like, because you're missing now some of the conversations, they could have, you know, added the first pensive visit. Where, you know, Dumbledore and Harry kind of go back to where, you know, you see the House of Gaunt, and it's like Marvolo, Morfin, Merope. And you get to see, actually, the important thing is Merope falling in love with Riddle, right?
Yes.
And so, and how she uses a potion to actually to marry Riddle, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, this explains why Voldemort, and also kind of the rules around that, to say a child born out of, you know, portion,
a love portion
mm-hmm. tends to have struggle with loving,
yeah.
right? And the issues that they struggle with. That's such an important key to who Voldemort is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so you threw that out the window for you to, like, do, like, a one scene of Bellatrix just going, like, I kill Sirius Black. I'm like, I don't really care. Like, I'm like,
well, those are not... Well, who does not love Helen Bowman Carter?
She's amazing. She's amazing. She's amazing, but I'm like, yeah, like, there's so many other things. That, like, yeah, I'm like,
I agree.
I'm like, bring her out in Death of the Hollows, where she actually has a big role.
She does have a big role.
You know, mm-hmm. and bring her out there. Like,
yeah.
Rather than, like, here, you know, be, like, at least be tasteful about it. Like, so mm-hmm. that, like, you have those deep things, those meaningful things that make everything, like, yeah. in this book.
Well,
this
and Voldemort book is, also, this is where we see his, like, obsession with...
Right.
If he, like, latches onto this obsession that, like, if you are powerful, you cannot die. Because he is an orphan, like, he latches onto that where, like, he's like, if you were a powerful witch or wizard, then you wouldn't die.
Right.
Because his parents... death, well, like, his mom's death
yeah.
leads him to have a miserable upbringing mm-hmm. on top of his lack of sympathy from the love potion.
Right.
It's like, there's just all these layers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You really lose
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you lose so much. So it's kind of like I've brought up, you know, before as well, like, there's this lack of respect for the book.
Mm.
If they took what they wanted, you know, they took the not the essence, but they took the
pop version, kind
the
of.
The pop version. They took the difference, you know, like, where it's like, oh, this is what makes this different.
Mm-hmm.
So they still have the X factor of, like, wow, like, wizards in the school and
yeah.
this. And, like, they took those things throughout the series, but they removed the depth, the things that make everything meaningful. It's almost like doing Lord of the Rings and removing some of the important conversations about how the rings were made
yeah.
or something, you know, like, and where it's just like, there are these evil rings and they need to get thrown. They're like, and they're like, okay, how were they made? Like, who made them? You know? And I think it's so important to keep some of those things. And I'm very disappointed with that. And there are other things, but, you know, I'll leave that to you.
So for Essence, I also gave it half a star. This, I also wonder if I'm being a little bit harsh because, like, this is probably my favorite book. I love the deep dive into
yeah.
Voldemort, like, what transformed him from Tom Riddle to Voldemort, like, going through his past and seeing that transformation, seeing, like, all these little snippets that Dumbledore has picked up. And again, this goes through the overarching theme that J.K. Rowling puts in all the Harry Potter books of the disenfranchised. So it's like, we get Morfin's memory, who's considered an outcast, who's considered crazy. Like,
right.
we get his memory and we get to see, like, that Voldemort actually went back there and, like, took the ring from him.
Mm.
I think it's Hokey, the house elf. And that's when we see the Hufflepuff cup and all of that. And it's like, so because they didn't do that, then they had to add in this layer of, like, Harry hears the Horcruxes now. Because, which is, I think, I don't mind that too much because I think you kind of need something to show, to signify that Harry is also a Horcrux, to hint that to the audience. So I don't mind that necessarily too much, but I do think that, like, you do lose on that background. On top of that, though, like, Harry is very paranoid in this. And he also kind of, he does dabble a little bit with dark magic, which I think is important because he kind of needs this lesson when he is going through his potion book. He kind of needs this lesson of, like, you know, I think all kids, or anyone really, kind of has this struggle of light and dark, where it's like, do the right thing or do the wrong thing, and something as simple as, like, a book can lead you down a bad path.
Yeah.
So I think that was really important. That's an important lesson. And then lastly, like, I just think Ginny comes out of nowhere. Like, we don't really get why Harry likes Ginny in the movie. Like, it's out of nowhere. You don't even have, like, This is supposed to be like the happiest he's ever been in his entire life. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't get that, and you don't get why. It's like, why would he marry Ginny? Like, this just seems so weird. So I think those are like my main reasons why I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and generally the tone of Harry is it's softer in the movies. It's very like, he's very, you know, the one argument he has with Lupin at the Weasleys, where they're talking about Snape. And they're like, we trust Snape, but we don't, you know. And Harry kind of backs down. But in the book, Harry, like, is very forceful. He's a forceful personality. He's very, like, really argumentative.
Yeah.
And so you don't see that in the movies. You miss that side. Like, he's pretty glorified in the movies, you know, where glorified, but at the same time, it's kind of weird because you get to, like, when he attacks Malfoy, you know, and it's kind of out of, in the movies, it's kind of like he uses a very like crazy, you know, very crazy like spell that really hurts Malfoy. And in the movie, it doesn't, it just, they almost kind of brush over it. Like,
yeah, it's like there's like, no consequence
there's
to
no
it.
There's no consequence, there's no conversation. There's like, it just goes whoop over. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, what the heck, guys? Like, so what happens now? So it's kind of like,
also, the whole tone of that scene is different because in the book, Draco Malfoy tries to use Crucio on him, which is an unforgivable curse. So it's like Harry is justified kind of in using a stronger spell than what he normally would.
Yeah.
But I also think that this was a time where it like comes back later in the seventh book where Harry, you know, is using spells like Expelliarmus where they're like, where Lupin like yells at him for doing that, but it's like, I think he learned his lesson. Like, I don't want to be a killer.
Right.
I don't want to kill people. Like, look what I did to Draco. I almost killed Draco. Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, when you said that, I just thought of
what?
Just side note, like, Dark Crystal. I'm no killer.
Sorry.
I just.
Oh, and then the other thing too is like, again, we completely cut out the house elves. So, like, we don't.
Right.
Like, creature is Harry's now.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
I won't.
creature won't. Oh my gosh, creature, little buddy. It all works out in the end.
Yeah, they really cherry picked the what they did with the owls. Like, and it's disappointing.
It is disappointing.
So it's kind of like
it's hard though. Like, I really get their struggle. I really truly get their struggle. Like, there is a lot of wealth of information in these books, and there's a lot of mystery, a lot of things like that. And it's like, I think it's really hard to do an adaptation. So it's like, I get that, but it's like, again, a half a star for this.
Yeah.
So anyway, X Factor.
Still one. I'll still give it one.
It's
still a different concept, and like, I mean, these guys could go as nuts as whatever, but like, I mean, there's a line, but but like, generally, like, they kept themselves at a safe distance, like, where it's still like had that like X factor, you know, and I think that's. Yeah, that's cool. It's cool that they managed to do that. So we can't take that from them.
Yeah, we can. I give it one as well. Again, it's like we were watching this movie again just to like, you know, freshen our minds, get ready for this podcast. And I'm just like, well, time to put on the seventh one now.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's like, you just want to keep going. Like,
yeah,
it's one of those, like, it's a story that I think just captures you every time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. So, surprisingly, Shalom and I actually agreed on everything.
Yeah.
So, this movie gets 4 stars.
4 stars. Yep.
It did it.
Yep, it did it. Made it.
So, Shalom, what was something that you felt like this movie really brought to life? Mm. And what is something that, like, you really missed from the book?
Okay, I'm going to start with what they did well. Like, Quidditch. For me, the Quidditch
this is
really
the best
came
Quidditch.
Through. And like I said, like, I felt like they got comfortable. They got really comfortable with CGI, really comfortable with what they wanted to do. And I thought that their delivery there was phenomenal. It was really good. What I wish they'd done, come on, like the minister scene. Like,
That's one
guys.
Of my favorite scenes.
Guys, this is, I'm okay. To be honest with you, if I'm not mad that they cut. I'm not saying like when it comes to essence, like, I wouldn't remove points for this. Because it's not really...
something you enjoy.
It's not really, like, central to, like, the book, per se. But it's such an enjoyable thing to watch, you know? Like, I'm like, wow, so what about, like, the Muggle world? How's that interaction going? That would have been fun to see. And to see the painting, like, talk to, like, someone who's, like, you know, that like that scene where, he, like, the minister is kind of thinking back to the first time
yeah.
he met Fudge and stuff like that. So it's like... I just wish they'd done it. Still, it's not as consequential as other things that I miss. Like also the tea scene with like Dumbledore and the Dursleys and
oh my gosh.
And that, like, I thought like that was, there's something very in my mind reconciling between the two worlds for me with
yeah.
Dumbledore meeting the Dursleys. I'm trying to think if in the movies they ever, those two worlds ever really mix, except when Harry runs away from home.
Yeah, like you have in the car, and then like a little bit in the first one when Hagrid comes to pick up Harry.
Right, but like the interaction between, you really see interaction between the Dursleys and Harry's friends or
yeah,
family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You really
which
see that.
Which happens a lot more in the
book. Right, in the book. And I feel like there's almost like a reconciling aspect to it because Harry's in two very opposite worlds. But I feel like that they took the Narnia route, which is like, you know, there's a wardrobe. Nothing comes across. Nothing comes
yeah,
from
nothing
the
comes.
Magic world to the normal world.
Uh-huh.
It, like, it's just the normal that goes to the, like, people go into Narnia.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I'm like, okay, like, you know, that interaction almost reconciles the two for me. Mm-hmm. So I really wish those two, Dumbledore meeting the Dursleys, the ministers, Muggle and magical ministers interacting. I thought that would have really brought, you know, the whole thing together mm-hmm. for me, in my mind. But the minister one for me is not consequential.
Mm-hmm.
The Muggle one for me, I think, like the Muggle and Dumbledore, like the Dursleys and Dumbledore
yeah.
meeting, that for me is pretty consequential because it's Harry's world. You know, at some point the two have to interact, and the conversation between Dumbledore and Petunia is so important.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly important about like how Harry's mom is protecting,
yeah.
how the blood, the whole like aspect of blood,
yeah.
Is that important? How is Harry staying safe? You know, like it shouldn't be like just a vague like if you stay at this house you're safe. Like,
yeah.
It shouldn't be like that. It should be they needed to actually stop and actually be like, hey, here is how. And so I miss that. Like I wish they'd done it.
Yeah. I also put on my list of things that I felt like we missed. I also put the Dumbledore with the Dursleys because I just feel like someone in the movies had to stand up to the Dursleys
right.
and be like, yo, you didn't do what you said you were going to do.
Right.
Like, you actually treated Harry like crap and I asked you to protect him and you, like, did the bare minimum.
Right.
Which I really liked because it's like... the Dursleys treated him terribly. And then also, like, that scene in the book is how we know that, like, the charm is going to end when he turns
17
when he comes
right.
of age.
Right.
It's no longer gonna be there. And it's,
yeah.
like, that was kind of a hint towards what was going to happen at the beginning of the seventh book. So it's, like, they kind of talk about it at the beginning of the next movie, but I feel like it could be a little confusing. Like, how does Mad-Eye know this? Like, what? How do we know that this is happening?
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of something that I miss. Something else that I miss is I feel like they didn't really show the difference in how the ministry is treating things now.
Right.
I think this is really important because the ministry is now acknowledging that Voldemort is there. We've had a change in ministers. And I think it's important to say that the new minister is the head of the he was the head of the Auror's office.
Yes, it's a totally different approach.
Yeah, which is a totally different approach. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important because, like, you do often see things like that happen in times of war. It's like the person who will come to power will no longer be, like, a peacekeeping type of person.
Yeah.
It will now be someone who, like, is experienced in war, is experienced in, like, military, things like that.
Yeah.
So I think that that was really important, as well as we also find out in the book that Umbridge is still working in the ministry. So it's like, even though, I know, even though the ministry is now acknowledging Harry, there's still, like, this this ugly underbelly of what they're still allowing.
Yeah.
Because Umbridge just sneaks through. She never even gets in trouble for what she did. Like, she should have been sent to Azkaban. She was torturing students. So it's like, but that never happens.
Yeah.
So I think, like, I think that's very important. She tries to murder Harry Potter. She literally tries to murder him. but also, there's a lot of things, like, wizards are asked to be protecting themselves more. Like, that one of my favorite things that ever happens in any of the books ever is you're supposed to verify people that you're talking to to make sure that they're not using Polyjuice Potion and or, like, they're not imperious or whatever.
Yeah.
And when Arthur Weasley comes home, he says to Molly, he's like, what do you... you have to ask the question. And she's like, what do I like you to call me when we're alone? And he's like, Molly Wobbles. Which is so cute. But it's also like, they act like, you know, in the movie, they act like they don't know Harry's coming. They act like they don't know any of this stuff. Like, the burrow's not protected. The burrow ends up burning down. It's like, none of that would happen in the book because everybody's on high alert right now. Like, they know Voldemort's around. So it's like, I feel like they're kind of almost like, negating the fact that Voldemort's back a little bit. Like, they've kind of, it's a little wild to me.
Yeah. I think definitely, like, it does, you know, coming back to essence of like the book. Like,
yeah.
It really just shows sometimes, like, how like some of those things, like, are missed. But I feel like they're very lucky to, like, remove those things and still have something that's worth watching.
Yes, it's, like, still worth watching.
That's still amazing. Like, it's still, like, don't get us wrong. We'll critique the heck out of this movie.
Yes, but we love it.
But we love it. But, like, for me, it's like, oh, you miss so much. Like, you miss so many opportunities. And it's just, for me, I don't give them credit. I don't give the movie makers credit for the scripting. I don't give them credit for the essence. I give that to J.K. Rowling. What I would give them credit for is their casting is phenomenal. The cast was the people they picked to play the roles. Like, I mean, that, you know, the actors are they're famous for it. You know what I mean? And especially, you know, Emma Watson is, like, you know, doing all kinds of stuff now. But she'll always be known as Hermione.
Yep.
You know? Or Belle. But Hermione's kind of, like, her, like, prominent role that she's, like, playing. And so iconic. And so it's one of those things where they really cast. But definitely when it comes to the success of the movies, I would give J.K. Rowling maybe about 70-80% of the reason why it's so successful.
Yeah, because if you didn't read the books, the movies wouldn't make sense.
Right, exactly. So it's like, I give her, like, that, or even just the idea of her concept she's working with, it's all hers. Which is why these guys kerfuffled a bit, but it still came through. I think it's because of her, the genius of her work.
Yeah. And I kind of mentioned this already, but my last thing that I missed out on is I really love all the Voldemort memories.
Right, exactly.
I think it was so important. Like, it...
Because
basically, Harry's getting sent on a treasure hunt in the next two movies, the last book.
Yeah.
He's getting sent on a treasure hunt, and, like, this sets him up for success. And not only that, but Dumbledore is also, through these lessons, he's also teaching Harry to think critically, mm-hmm. which I think is really important. He's being taught to observe things and like, make deductions and, make inferences and things like that. Mm. Like, he's basically teaching Harry how to think critically about the situation and about other situations, you know? Mm-hmm. So, which leads to his success in the next book.
Yeah,
absolutely. For my, I have a actually decently long list of things that I think that this movie really brought to life. Fred and George's shop. Yeah. Like, loved it. I also that scene also really brought to life the like, despair of the wizarding world. Mm. And then how they're very, like, they're thriving. So, like, I thought that was really cool. Katie being cursed. Like, I think they took a risk there because they pulled something straight out of a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, straight out of a horror movie with her touching the necklace. Mm. But it worked to their advantage because they made it scary. Mm. You know, they made that scene really scary.
Yeah.
That scene scares me.
Yeah, that was pretty scary. Like, pretty weird to watch. It was like, oh my gosh. That was like, with the mouth. Just like,
yeah.
And we just watched Nancy Drew, which is like literally Nancy Drew. They're just trying to kill us, murder us with like fright.
Yeah.
Because like, it's crazy. And then you go to Harry Potter, it's like,
ah. Oh, the scream, everything about that is wild.
Everything about that is like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect match for Nancy Drew right now. Like, if I saw that Nancy Drew, I would be like, oh, this fits.
Slug Club. I thought, like, that was, oh my gosh, Slug Club gets me every time. So, I loved Slughorn's party. Mm. I loved Luna's dress. Harry inviting Luna.
Mm.
Luna's my favorite character. I think she's such a sweetheart. She's so awesome. I loved, I just loved what they put her in.
Her big hat.
Yeah. Her big Gryffindor hat. Like, they really brought her to life. When Ron takes a love potion, that scene. Yeah. Yeah. Killed it.
Yeah.
Killed it. Was great. Lucky Potion, again, killed it. The way that they did the tone and everything. And I remember the original time I saw this movie, I didn't know what it was going to look like when they went to go to the cave for the first Horcrux.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know how they're going to bring that to life. Because those chapters are freaking scary. Like, I remember reading those at night and, like, having nightmares when I was younger. Because they're scary with all, like, the zombies and everything. I was like, oh, this is going to be creepy.
Mm.
And then, like, Dumbledore with, like, the ring of fire over his head. I was like, holy crap. Like, this is, like, this is intense. So I thought that they did that great. I loved the way that they did the potion. And then, like, and then Harry goes to fill it with water and he can't get Dumbledore the water. Like, I thought that they really knocked those scenes out of the park. I really, really enjoyed those.
Yeah.
So while we were watching this, I had, like, a few other things that kind of came to my mind. So I kind of wanted to talk about Draco's mission a little bit because I feel like this book, we've always seen Draco as this almost like impervious character, like, you know, even when they get in fights, like, he still comes back all haughty and everything like that. So, we kind of see Draco falling apart here a little bit. Like, what do you think about that?
I think that, you know, Draco, like, they really show kind of the gradual, decay, is that the word? Like, kind of off his, like, kind of even his demeanor, like, you can see, like, he starts off arrogant and so forth, and then he ends up being, like, very, like, almost sick, you know, physically sick.
Mm-hmm.
I love the scene, like, I love the scene where he gets off the bed and, like, and his feet touch the floor.
Yeah.
I thought, and there's a hesitation almost to that. So, there's just these little things that they did that I thought were cool. Like, I thought that was cool, like, to show that he's struggling. I would have loved it if they had
Moaning Myrtle.
That was a big kind part. Kind of like to be like, he's crying, he's doing this, you know, to kind of talk about it. But I thought that was maybe a good alternative. That was a good alternative to that. I did not feel like it took away from me. But But yeah, like it's very interesting, like how for me, one of the things I think of is, you know, I think there are people, there are maybe three kinds of people. Those are not the only ones. They're probably more complicated versions of this. But there are people who hate, like, who are, like, anti-hate, right? Like, you know, great people, like, who are, like, we say no to hate, we fight hate, you know, we don't participate in, like, hatred. Then I feel like there are these people who empathize with hate, right? Who are, like, and I feel like the Malfoys kind of fit into that, where they are very much, like, they listen to when Voldemort speaks, they're like, yeah, he's right. Voldemort is right, like, you know, we should be ruling the world. And then you have people who are like, let's go murder everyone, and like
that's, you know, like the Voldemort, that's Bellatrix. Like
Voldemort, Bellatrix, Greyback, like all these, like, you know, psychos. And and I feel like Malfoy is in that middle section where he's like very, like, he curses out Hermione constantly, calling her mudblood. And when it comes to a moment where, obviously, you know, Voldemort is, they don't tell us this in, you know, in the movie, but Voldemort is punishing the Malfoys.
Yeah.
You know, and which is just another thing that, you know, producer script skipped over. But it's a form of punishment. Even though Malfoy is saying, I'm proud, I'll do it, you know, I wanna do it. But as he's continuing to do these little weird attempts, he's starting to like really feel. Part of me wonders is like if like one of the attempts that he made to kill Dumbledore, when he did it, I think maybe something snapped. Like, you know, I can imagine. I'm like, okay, you know, first time he plans it. He's like, he's gonna touch the necklace and he's gonna like die, right? And
he's gonna die.
And then he like, you know, then sends someone off and he's like, wow, I'm doing it, I'm murdering someone, I'm actually murdering Dumbledore now. And that moment, and then where he just, you break and you're like, oh my gosh, I've murdered him, I'm killing him. And then you realize, whoo, you never got to him.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that might have had an impact, like an impact. two attempts. By the time you hit like one where he's standing in front of Dumbledore with a wand, he can't do it, you know. And I can see those other two occasions being almost like reality checks for him, without the consequence of actually killing someone. So that's kind of how I process
that. I think it's in the book. I think it's Dumbledore who says it, but I think Dumbledore says to Harry, like, killing is not nearly as easy as the innocent believe it is. I think it's this book. I can't remember if it's this one or The Order of the Phoenix. But I think about that with Draco, where it's like, I think at first maybe he was like proud to be given this mission.
Right.
He's like, I'm really trusted.
Right.
And his mom sees through it immediately. She's like, Dumbledore's the strongest wizard.
Right.
Like, it's like Voldemort and Dumbledore are like the strongest wizards, right?
Right.
And like Draco's getting stuck in the middle. And like, thank goodness that Dumbledore is a great person, and he comes up with another plan so that Draco doesn't have to do it. But it's like, ugh, I feel for Draco. I really do. I feel like he was born into a situation where his parents, to be honest, I don't even know that his dad would have gone back to Voldemort, really, with the same vigor that he did when he was younger, because I think that life changes. I think he now has a child he needs to take care of. So it's like, I wonder if Lucius really even has the same devotion for Voldemort that he used to. Like, I don't think he does, because I think it's like what Dumbledore says, like, love changes people. Love changes people. Yeah. Love changed Snape. Love changed Lucius Malfoy. Like, love is what, in the last book, when Narcissa has to say if Harry's alive or dead, she lies to Voldemort because she loves Draco.
Right.
You know? So it's like,
right,
there's, that's something that Voldemort doesn't get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of something that Draco's dealing with here. And I do feel for Draco in these. I feel like you know, he's another Snape situation. He made a lot of bad choices, and it's not really who he is.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's not really who he is. Yeah. He went down a path, and he didn't realize it was going to get him to where he was.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's kind of killing him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my feeling about Draco. I also want to talk about Ginny. Because there are a lot of people who argue that Bonnie Wright is a terrible actress, and that's why this, like, that's why it kind of failed here.
Yeah.
But I also was thinking, like, was Ginny even given a chance? Like, was the script even strong enough?
No. Yeah, the script was terrible. Like, horrible for Ginny. Like, it's like, yeah, I don't know where people get that opinion. Like, when the moment, the scene where they're at the Quidditch tryouts and she's like, you know, shut it! You know, you can see that she does have that capability to be more, like, explosive, more outgoing, more like the George and Fred. You know, like, she has that potential. The issue is that I think that they decided to go a different direction. Like, I mean, how many characters do we have in this whole series that are toned down, even though, you know, the actors are very capable of doing more? So, like, you know, honestly, like, the common denominator for me is the writers, the script writers, you know, the production. Like, they did not give her enough of an opportunity to really come out and be herself. They made her seem more like, you know, like a housewife type of vibe. Like, they really toned it down, even though she's powerful and probably, like, one of the more powerful, like, students. You know, she's really, really powerful. And, you know, but they really toned it down in the movies, which is sad.
I do kind of, like, I don't know. Because when I watch Bonnie play Ginny, I feel like she's toned down, but I'm like, is she toning down the character, or was she just given, like, really weird parts? Like, they have them at the Weasley's house sitting on the couch together, and, like, she's feeding Harry on the couch. I'm like, doesn't seem like something Ginny would do. Like, Ginny's not really like that. Like, we kind of get a little bit of that fiery personality in the Quidditch scene. Like, we get a little bit of there, but, like, she's supposed to be cracking jokes all the time, kind of the life of the party. Like, that's who she's supposed to be, and I feel like we don't really get to see that.
Yeah.
And she's also, like, willing to have hard conversations with Harry, you know? Like, she talks to Harry about his book, his Half-Blood Prince book. She's like, hey, don't take instructions from a book. Like, she's really in his face about certain things. And, I feel like they gave her weird scenes. Like, the Room of Requirement scene is really weird when he kisses her. Like, that's, it's just weird. Like, I just, like, feel like they gave her weird lines and, like, weird, like, setups of, like...
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's like, all of it, it's weird. It's like, guys, the lines they gave her are crappy. Even for someone who's shy, it's still crappy. It's like, the mouth thing, like, I was like... Oh, like, to be honest with you, like... When she's feeding him.
I'm like, what mouth thing?
When she feeds him, like, I was like...
What am I watching right now?
What am I seeing right now? Like, what is this? You know, and so...
But then it's like, so they give her these weird scenes, right? And then they try to give her, like, these brave scenes. Like, she runs into the like, field with him when the Burrow's getting attacked.
Right, exactly.
It's the two of them. Exactly. But it's, like, those aren't, like, talking scenes.
Right.
Like, they took away all of her lines.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, give her more opportunities to, like, actually, like, bring it out.
Like, actually be Ginny.
Be Ginny. But also, she's toned down. I mean, Harry is too... Almost, there are a lot of characters that are kind of toned down in these movies. So, like, it's kind of like, it's one of those things where you're kind of like, okay, like, it's definitely the writer's fault. Like, for me, before the actor, like, definitely we should look into, like, the writers. Like, to be honest, like, that's, you know, we will never know. We will never know about the actor there. We will never know. But what we definitely do know is that the writers have now, like, almost like a trend of kind of writing weird.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I hear that. Mm. So what about the slug club? Like, do we think that's ethical? Like, what do you think about the ethicalness of a teacher having the slug club?
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. Like, I'm like, it's terrible. I mean, it's fun. It is very fun. It's very much like, this is like the elite club, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those, like, when you place yourself in those scenarios, it's like, okay, does he actually care? Because, I mean, Lily sends him like a flower.
You know,
that turns into a fish.
Yeah.
And that means he means a lot, like, to her.
I think he genuinely cares for his students. It doesn't seem like he doesn't care for them. Like, I wouldn't argue that. But I do think that it sets a standard for jealousy. Like, you see this definitely more in the book with the slug club. You see it more in the book where, like, Ron is really jealous. And I think that does lead to him. Part of the reason why he does date Lavender.
Yeah.
Instead of just dating Hermione in the first place.
Yeah.
Is, like, he is jealous that, you know, Harry and her are invited to the slug club. Mm-hmm. Like, and Ginny. Like, they're all invited to the slug club. And he's not. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, I think being overlooked like that, that's also Draco as well. Draco gets overlooked for the slug club as well. And he's used to being a favorite. So,
sir.
It sets up, I think you know my grandfather.
Nope.
He's like, Death Eaters, stay away from you. But I think he has his favorites, and I think he wants to set them up for success. Like, and he does, you know, he introduces students to the right types of people to help them get the jobs that they need. But it also does benefit him. You know, he always gets an in at the Daily Prophet. He always has tickets to go see the Quidditch matches. He always, like, he has these certain things that he always has.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways it's like, it's networking.
Right.
But in other ways it's like, I don't know if as a teacher you should be.
It's unhealthy,
Yeah, it's like it creates an unhealthy atmosphere for a lot of students.
Yeah, exactly. And he gets benefits from it. He gets stuff in return.
Yeah.
Like his life, like when they go to his house, like they're like, oh, look at all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because I think that's what he wants. Like, Dumbledore calls it what? A collection?
Collects people.
Students. Like, and I think that's kind of like. It's not ethical. It's legal. You can do whatever you want, but like it's one of those things. It's like, okay, this is not an ethical thing to do. Like,
yeah,
it actually causes more problems than good things. So.
Yeah. So I feel like we can't talk about this movie without talking about Lavender Brown. Lavender Brown. Hilarious.
Yeah.
I think she does a great job being a fanatic over Ron.
Yes.
I love what's Dumbledore's line?
Yeah.
Dumbledore's line when Ron gets
old to be young and to feel love's keen sting.
Not in the book, but I have to say there are certain lines that they add to the movies. That's one of them. I love in The Order of the Phoenix when Umbridge is getting taken away by the centaurs and Harry's like, sorry, Professor, I mustn't tell lies. I'm like, yeah, take that, Umbridge.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's,
there's certain things he added that I really love.
Yeah. That's true.
One. That's one of them. That's one of them.
Yeah. So there's a sad kind of twist to that as well, like with Lavender Brown. So the first two actresses to act as Lavender Brown were black. There's Kathleen Cawley, who in Chamber of Secrets, she's black. And Jennifer Smith in Prison of Azkaban, she's black as well, like the actresses. And then we come to this moment where it's like Ron has a love interest, you know, someone that he's with, and all of a sudden the person becomes white. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm like, okay. I've seen role changes before. I've seen like characters change. Right? I've seen that happen. Dumbledore changes to someone else, right?
Yeah.
but they didn't go from Dumbledore white to Dumbledore black, you know, like black actor. Like, yeah, they went from, you know, white guy, still long beard, you know, kind of looks the same. But then with this one character, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, color's changed. What happened? You know, and I, to be honest, I take issue with Lavender. That. Right? You look different, Lavender. Right? Like, and I take issue with that because it's like, okay, clearly this is racism. Clearly. Like, I don't care what excuse people give to this. It's very telling. It's very telling that you know, it's with issues on mixed race couples and nowadays mixed race couples, you see them everywhere, all movies, all shows, because yeah, it's like an in thing now, right? Like people right? Like, was that how people, you know, look at ads, like it's like an in thing now, like, but before, like, it's like,
although I have to say, when Shlomo and I met, we did not see very many ads with mixed race couples. We did not. Probably, yeah, I would say like a year into our marriage, like, mm-hmm, after, like a year later, that's when we started seeing like mixed everywhere, couples everywhere.
TV shows, mixed couples, yeah, like everywhere.
It like blew up.
It's like, it's a thing now, you know, and that's, for me, like, it's a shame about that time where it's like, you know, and it's a shame about the system, you know, mm-hmm, and I don't know if that's really changed per se, but it's a sad situation where it was like, you know.
So I have a question for you. Like, okay, here's this. I think this was done very tactlessly.
Very.
Personally.
Right.
Especially because they've been okay with a lot of other changes they've made. Right. Like, Tonks really doesn't look the way Tonks should. Right. Like, Slughorn, Snape, like,
right,
they don't really look the way that they should. They really, right, make, like,
right,
they really make Hermione look much more beautiful than she's, right, supposed to look in the book. Same with Harry. Like, there's a lot of changes like that, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think it's really tactless to have credited roles, although they were not speaking roles, still have credited roles of two black actresses.
Right.
And then,
right,
make her white when she finally has a talking part.
Right.
I think it's tactless. But one could argue in the book, Lavender Brown is white.
Regardless. It's like,
so what, like, yeah, so do you think, like, in that way, like, you don't have to be true to the book. Like, you've already made all these changes.
I mean, you've already, like, you know, honestly, it's like, if they had said, or if the actor was black in the book, and then they went white in the movie, and then, like, it's a school, like, you've got black and white people, and
yeah, so, boy,
there's a mixture of that, I would have been like, okay, I see that. But if you start off with two black actresses playing non-speaking parts, then all of a sudden you have, you know, the part that's, like, huge. This person is dating one of the main characters, yeah, right? And then all of a sudden you change that person to being white.
To match the book description.
To match the book's description. But, like, but it's, for me, it's like, why should you change it? Why do you have to match the book's description if you've not been matching the book's description with a lot of things?
With
all these characters. So that excuse for me is totally out the window, because I'm like, you have not cared, you know, of, yeah, the book as much as you should. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we really care about the book.
We wanted now it to we match. Care.
You know, so that's, for me, that's why, like, that argument has just not, has just not, like, cooled down my rage,
yeah,
on this, I mean, issue.
It's definitely underlying racism.
Yeah.
I would,
absolutely,
say. Absolutely. To feel no guilt in changing, mm-hmm, a character who has been traditionally, yeah, played as,
yeah,
as a black woman.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, in that time, like, I mean, one of the observations, like, you know, like,
it's a very white film.
If you see, it's a very white film. Like, movies like that, it's like, you know, like, I don't remember a lot of, like, rom-com, vibey, white shows where black people were kissing, or unless if it was like a soul movie, like one of those, like, Tyler Perry movie, or like a movie where it's like, it's black on black, you know.
Well, I don't know if you can argue that in this movie, because Dean Thomas and Ginny have a whole scene where they're making out.
Where?
In The Three Broomsticks.
We see them making out.
Yeah, Ron gets pissed about it, and Hermione talks about
Wait,
it.
Dean, okay.
Yeah.
Ah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Like, I, I hear that.
But
I hear
they
that.
Also completely you know, cut on, out.
I don't even see. You know, honestly, I don't even see it. I don't even see it.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't even, like, in when you look at that shot. Okay, the shot is Dim Thomas is turned towards Jeannie, right? Mm-hmm. And they're kissing. I don't even really see, like, oh, yeah, that's a black person kissing. If I did not know the books, I would not know that's a black person kissing a white girl.
I think you can tell that Dean Thomas is black.
No, you can tell. But I'm just saying, like, if you don't know, if you're not following, this series has a billion characters, right? Mm-hmm. Dean Thomas, for me, I only caught on that Dean Thomas is black when we started the series, when we started reading the books. That's the only time, that's the first time that I was like, wow, this is Dean Thomas. So Dean Thomas is a background character. He's not a main character.
Yeah.
And in the movie, the shot is so in a dark lit room where you don't really see, like, oh, there's like, they're the lips touching. They're really kissing. Like, they're like, you don't, it's such a dark scene. You don't have it out in the open where it's like, wow, here's some light. Here's them kissing in front of like all the people cheering and everything. You don't have that. So that's still, even though, yeah, okay, I'll give you that they do, Dean is black and he's kissing Jeannie, but it's totally out of frame, really, you know, from the main things that are happening. So I still come back to the same place.
I hear you. Yeah. And they also completely cut out Angelina Johnson, who is black.
Mm.
And they talk about, like, they do talk about when she gets her hair braided in the fifth book.
Right.
They talk about how she gets her hair braided, and Pansy Parkinson says it looks like you have worms on your head, which is like completely racist.
Right.
And it's like they cut her out. Mm. Dean basically has no talking parts. Dean is actually pretty big in the sixth book,
right?
Because he joins the Gryffindor Quidditch team, so he's right. He has a lot of speaking parts in the book. So I do hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you a lot. I think it was really tactless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does show just, like, our racism as a culture being okay with when a character finally does have a speaking part. Like,
right.
Even though I think this actress who plays Lavender Brown really knocks it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say, though, that a black actress couldn't have knocked it out of the park?
Could have easily knocked it out of the park. You know? It could have been – it's not like that character is, like, a very difficult, like – personality to portray, you know what I mean? Like, very, like,
she's lovey just very dovey, much in love,
like, in love, like, that's something that, like, that should be, like, easy to deliver. So it's one of those things where you just land on, you know, like, Hollywood has had a lot of racism. Yeah, like, I really think there's some fundamental issues at Hollywood where, you know, they are very knee-jerk, so they'll be like, oh, Oscar's so white. And then, you know, Hollywood freaks out, and the next year it's like they give all the awards to, not maybe not all, but a lot of awards to people of color. And then, you know, they get back to the old ways, and it's like, oh, you know, this is so racist. And then they're like, oh, they get scared, and then they do knee-jerk reaction type things. And I feel like I love what Starbucks did, where they're like, we're going to shut down for like half a day or something and just talk and say, we're changing things from the top to the bottom. Mm. We're changing. And that is something that is so crucial to the industry today, for them to actually be like, we're not just going to react to this year, like it's like all white male nominees, you know, for actor of the year. We're not just going to, like, react to the backlash, you know, that was caused by that. But we are going to actually be like, okay, what is it about our system that we can change so that it's not just swinging one way or another, but it's actually something that's equal and gives everybody the opportunity to shine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think before we move on to our hot take, I just want to say I don't agree with them changing Lavender from a black actress to a white actress. I would love to get to the place in society where we actually can have true equality, where it's like the person who is truest to the role, like who portrays the role the best. I don't think we're there yet, which is why I think in a situation like this, it's definitely a product of its time, where I think if Harry Potter was done today, they wouldn't have swapped they wouldn't have swapped her over to mm-hmm. a white actress because mm-hmm. the backlash would have just been mm-hmm. out of this world, mm-hmm. like out of control. Like,
yeah.
you just can't do stuff like yeah. that. It's really, yeah. it's really wrong. But that being said, like, I also understand where they're like, okay, she's white because that's what the role is in the book. We don't really hear any, like, we don't really get a description of what Lavender looks like, really, until Ron's interested in her in the sixth book.
Yeah, so, but still, like, you know, you've done it. Like, I disagree with that, mainly because it's like they just have not cared about it before. Yeah. They've just not
you just can't stuck change with it. Though.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, if you haven't cared, so now it's inconsistent.
Which is why I said it's a product of its time. You can see the inherent racism within the casting.
Yeah.
Where they feel okay to change something like that, which I think is wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Are we ready for our hot take?
Hot take.
Okay. So, Harry Potter hot take. I have 1 minute to give my hot take, and then we will argue about it. So, here we go. I'm starting the timer now.
Now.
So, my hot take is that Hagrid and Arthur Weasley are better father figures than Sirius Black. So, point number one, Hagrid actually cries when he has to give Harry to the Dursleys. Point number two, both Hagrid and Arthur have moments where they yell at the Dursleys for their treatment of Harry. Number three, Hagrid is great because he literally goes to all of Harry's, okay, maybe not all of them, but he goes to most of Harry's Quidditch games and is always there to cheer him on. Hagrid also makes sure that Harry gets letters when he's at school and invites him to his house all the time. He's always asking him about how school's going. And lastly, Arthur Weasley is always, always, always listening to Harry's paranoid accusations, which is a lot because Harry's really paranoid. So I'm not saying that I don't like Sirius. I'm just saying that Harry has these wonderful men in his life who actually, like, love him and care for him. And Harry, like, gives them zero credit whatsoever and instead is just reckless like Sirius. And my time is up.
Wee, 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 wee. Wow. Wow. Okay. Your first point about crying... Hagrid cries over anything.
Listen.
If a little insect got born in Hagrid's hand and then Hagrid has to, like, put it down, you start crying.
Listen.
That's just who Hagrid is. He, like, cries.
Hagrid is a wonderful, sensitive soul.
Is. He is.
And you know what? He freaking loves Harry.
He does.
He loves Harry so much that when he delivers Harry to the Dursleys, he understands that he's going to give Harry kind of a crappy life until he gets to come back to the wizarding world.
Yeah.
And it makes him very sad and he cries about it.
Yeah. He's like, he cries. Like, I think Harry has just mischief. And I think there's an obsession with his dad. There's an obsession with Dumbledore. There's an obsession with Sirius. With like and with like I mean like father figure type of people. And he loves Hagrid. He loves Hagrid. Mm-hmm. Like he's loyal to Hagrid. So. But I don't think he respects him the way that he should.
Yeah.
Like, as a father figure.
As well.
Right. And Arthur Weasley, exactly. And these personalities that are there for him. The Weasleys lose so much for Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they lose so much for him. And it's one of those things where it's like, hey, like, can you be more, like, thankful? I don't even know if that's the right word. Like, thankfulness. But rather, he leans towards guilt. Like, he leans towards, like, no, won't you die for me? You know? Rather than being like, wow, how can I, like, you know... his posture with these personalities that are not alpha-type personalities is very, like, he's not kind, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. He's not kind to them. And part of me wonders if it's that Horcrux in him. Like,
you love that, but I just think he's arrogant.
Because there's something wrong with this kid. Like, if you
he was literally, like, mentally abused since he was a child.
Which is true.
You know what I mean? Like, which Dursleys didn't pay any attention to them. And, like, psychologically speaking, like, children need a certain level of attention or they, like, they get weird. And it's like, I think that's why Harry is the way that he is. And I think that's why he obsesses and he clings and he does all that. And he's not always super grateful because he didn't get the proper attention that he deserved as a child.
I hear that. But still, the Horcrux, right?
I'm like, let's talk about, like, psychology and, like, what that does to children. Shalom's like, what about a Horcrux?
Because when we do the next movie, we're going to talk about the scene where Harry Potter and Voldemort are doing their anime moment where they talk about their moves before they do them. Like, you know, where
I'm gonna wand swish and then do this and then do this and then, like, go into their brain and they tell us, like, five episodes.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Somehow in anime, like, punches last literally 10 episodes. I'm like, how did we get here?
They would tell the villain's story when the person is, like, flying to punch the other person. And that's like, okay, we're going to see the actual punch, like, at the end of the season.
Yeah. You know? It's wild.
It's crazy. I'm like, why do you do this? But you do see there's a very different Harry Potter that comes out of, like, death, you know, so to speak. You know, and that's kind of where
I felt like Harry's change happened when he realized that he had a Horcrux in him and that he had to give up his life for everyone else. I don't feel like it's after he died. I felt like it was kind of the little bit of moments right before he died.
I mean, him dying is not really, to be honest, it's not really surprising because he's done things, like, taken those kind of risks before where he just steps out and just, like, puts himself in harm's way.
I don't think it's the him dying. I think it's his mentality going into it.
I guess so. Like, I mean, for me, I think it's that Horcrux element of him.
Here we go.
That I think comes out. Because I agree, like, you know, abuse does, like, have massive impact on who a person is. But Harry's, like, there's something about Harry that's just, for me, is very representative of Voldemort, very representative of how Voldemort thinks and functions. There are these elements of that he has that are very, you know, kind of like we're very like that, very like Voldemort. And that's just something that, I don't know, this is just my thoughts, my hot take, which I will share in the next book.
So I think my thing is, like, I don't want anybody out there thinking, like, I don't like Sirius. I love Sirius. I really do. I think, especially book Sirius. Book Sirius is, like, on fire, loves Harry, wants to do everything he can to keep Harry safe. Mm-hmm. And I love the way in the fourth book, he really stands up for Harry when, like, Dumbledore is like, I want to hear, like, exactly what happened in the graveyard. And Sirius is like, do you have to have him do this now? Like, sticking up for him.
Yeah.
Because Harry really didn't have that before. Yeah. But I think the thing with Sirius is I feel like Harry I think Harry loves Sirius more than he should because of this, like, hope that Sirius is going to, like, take him away from the Dursleys and that he's, like, a connection to his father. Mm. Like, I think, Harry really does have these, like, daddy issues where it's, like, he just wants to be like his dad. He wants to be like his dad. And, like, Sirius was his dad's best friend. And it's, like, I wonder if Arthur Weasley had been his dad's best friend, like, would Harry love Arthur more? You know, I think it's kind of like, you know, what I talked about with Cho Chang. Like, we're seeing the world through Harry's eyes and his emotions. So it's like we get really attached to Sirius. And I think Sirius is great, but I also think that Sirius is reckless. And I think that it really encourages Harry to be reckless in many ways, as opposed to, like, you know, Hagrid and Arthur, who, like, encourage him to stay safe. Like, they encourage him a lot more to stay safe than to be reckless. So I feel like I just feel like Harry doesn't give Hagrid and Arthur as much credit as they deserve because they don't know his dad as well. You know what I mean? I feel like that's kind of what's happening.
And I think at the end of the day, like, really, the book is about his mom,
you know, and it's kind of like which represents more of the characters that Harry doesn't really give the credit that they deserve.
Yes.
You know, I can see Hagrid, I can see Arthur really being like kind of like reminiscent of the mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very caring, protective, very kind.
Yes.
And understanding. And I think
they're the ones that he glosses over.
Yeah. So he glosses over those characters and goes to the risk takers. You know, and that's just something that that, you know, we do see that in the end. It's like, really, if you look at it, if you think of these movies as, I don't think these movies are about Harry Potter, really, even though it's called Harry Potter, I think it's about the mom. I think it's the mom. The mom has such a strong influence on the whole entire series that Harry's success, Harry's protection, Harry's existence, it's the mom, right? Yeah. And even, like, the concept that protects him in the end, or protects everyone else in the end, it's the mom who created that. The mom who created that magic, right?
Yeah.
That Harry then replicates to protect everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think so, really, at the end of the day,
which they don't talk about in the movie.
Which they don't talk about in the movie. It's really the mom that is the centerpiece of this universe that we're in. And so that's just something that... Yeah.
And we do finally get a glimpse of Harry kind of recognizing that in the book. Because it does say when he turns over the resurrection stone and he sees his mom, he's like, the one person he really wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his mom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's like, he finally gets to that place.
Mm.
But it's almost like, sometimes I wonder, like, with J.K. Rowling, I'm like, I feel like, was she trying to portray, like, was she trying to trick us and, like, hide things through Harry's view? Or was she like, is she kind of deep down like a little bit sexist? Like, you know that sexism that's like in all of us where it's like even women tell women like, hey, you belong at home. Like, or the pressure that women put on other women to like be able to do it all, to be able to work and raise kids and do all that. Like, you know what I mean? Like that like inherent sexism that even women have against women. It's like, I wonder if she was trying to trick us. Or if it was coming through. Yeah. Because sometimes the way that she has women treat women within her books, I do wonder. Like,
it's horrible.
It's horrible. Like, in the language she uses, even when she talks about Petunia, like, the way she's like, she calls her like horse-faced and like long-necked and like, just like some of the words
she uses. J.K. Rowling is very eloquent at insulting. Very eloquent.
Yeah.
It's
kind of rude.
Yeah.
But, so it's such an interesting combo because it's like, at the end of the day, her lessons, I think, are really valuable. Like, she talks a lot about love, a lot about caring for the disenfranchised, a lot about caring for those, right?
Mm.
But then at the same time, it's like, a lot of her writing's very rude.
it's hard. It's very difficult because I feel like the book itself... The books advance a lot of sexism. You know, like, you know, like, it's hard. It's really hard to not see it. At the same time, I almost feel like she was maybe a little too clever for her own good in that she does have a twist in the end. It's a massive twist. With Lily. A massive twist.
It was throughout
all, like, all the books, really. It's like, you look like your father, but you have your mother's eyes. You look like your father, but you have your mother's eyes. But they don't really emphasize the mother's eyes aspect. They don't really stop and say, hey, let's really talk about the mom right now. We need to, you know. But
until
they
talk about Slughorn.
Until Slughorn, or until book six, where, you know.
Book seven,
where Snape is, you know, you meet Snape, young Snape, young
baby Snape.
Young Lily, young Petunia. But it's like she doesn't really give Lily the limelight that she deserves.
Yeah.
To the point that, you know, when you watch the movie, it's like, if you're just on like an action head and you're just like all about the action, you're going to miss. I missed all those points until I went through the books.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that I realized. I was like, holy cow, this whole thing is about the mom.
It's actually all about Lily. Like, actually, the entire thing is about Lily.
Mm.
And that's why, like, in the book, this book, Harry's so mad at Dumbledore right before they go to find the Horcrux. Because he just found out that Snape was the reason, like, Snape was the reason why the Potters were even attacked.
Mm.
And Harry's like, how can you trust him? And it's like, Dumbledore can't tell him, like, he's like, he hated my dad. How can you trust him? Like, of course he wanted to give information about my dad. It's like, Dumbledore can't tell him, like, he bro, loved your mom. It's not about your dad. It's he about loved, your yeah. mom. Like, uh-huh. you're making everything about your dad. Like, you forget that there's this whole other person.
Mm.
Like, you didn't just come from your dad, dude. Like, you did, okay? Like, it takes two to make a baby. So, like, I feel like... But I also wonder, like, is it inherent sexism, or is it also... Is she playing on our sexism where it's like, oh, of course the man is going to be the more important. Like, because it does seem like mothers like she's are
trolling,
often...
trolling us.
Yeah. Is she trolling us? Mm. We don't know.
Part of me feels like she is, you know. And J.K. Rowling doesn't help herself with, like, her Twitter existence.
Yeah,
which is
got weird.
Completely out, like, out of control. But, like, you know... If she had just, like, kept quiet and just, like, stayed off Twitter, it would have been a beautiful mystery of what is she doing? Maybe maybe she's teaching us a deep lesson. But then she goes on Twitter and just goes, wah! Like, oh, my gosh.
Although, I think she did, I think she did tweet at one point that, like, right before Lily and James died, like, Lily was actually pregnant and, like, and, Snape and James were, like, about to make up. Like, Lily had just convinced the two of them to meet and, like, make up and put old things aside. I'm like, why are you adding that now? I don't need to know that.
Right.
Don't add to the, like, devastation that, like, Lily's pregnant again. Like, are you kidding me?
Or write a book. Like, write a whole different... Actually, no, don't do it. Don't write a book.
No more books. No more we're books. Good.
Just... Let's keep it that way. Maybe, like, Crimes of Grindelwald and, you know, that world.
I
like those ones.
I like those movies. I think they would be better as books.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Because I think I think that's her strength, is writing books, not necessarily scripts.
Yeah.
So I would have liked...
Stay off Twitter.
Yeah. No more Twitter.
Don't do any more movies. Write books.
Well, good.
And
I want her to finish Fantastic Beasts.
Oh yeah, let's finish it because we're stuck with the story. Like Nancy Drew, which is not great, really which is not good. Drew. We wanted to finish it and we finished the season and we're proud of ourselves for finishing the story. Still terrible.
It was a little weird.
We want to like okay, I would be unfair if I said that like the whole world of Grindelwald and everything is as bad. It's not as bad. I actually enjoy it. I love Grindelwald as a character, and that's just something I'm enjoying, but it's not as great as the Harry Potter series, and we look forward to finishing it.
Yeah.
Okay, on that happy note, we will wrap up.
Yes, we are. Again, if you are interested in helping us hit our goal of raising $250 for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, please head over to our Instagram, the_happy_hipsters on Instagram. There is a link in our bio on how to donate to that cause.
How to donate. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey.
See you next week.